Better or worse, this hotel's been run by proxy for a decade. There was just enough acid in her voice to let him know her opinion was worse. Now, you drop in out of nowhere and stir things up. You always were one for stirring things up.
It's my hotel, and it needs stirring up.
I won't disagree. The Logans haven't taken enough interest in this place.
My father.
You're not your father, she reminded him. No point in using him as an excuse when you just finished making sure to get that point across yourself. That rap on the knuckles made him nod.
All right. Then we'll say I'm here now. I intend to take plenty of interest and make no excuses.
Good. She opened her steno pad again. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So, he got to his feet, wandered to the window.
Let's get started. The flower arrangements, he began.
He put in a 14-hour day, eating what passed for lunch at his desk. Because he wanted to keep his business local, he met with an island contractor personally and went over his renovation requirements. He instructed his assistant to order updated equipment for his office, then set up a meeting with the head of Island Tours. He re-ran figures, reviewed proposals, refined and solidified random ideas. He knew just how much it would cost in hard capital and in man-hours to implement his plans, but he was in for the long haul. Not everyone would think so, he admitted when he came to the surface and rubbed the stiffness out of the back of his neck. Mia wouldn't. He was grateful he'd had so much on his plate through the day. It had helped keep thoughts of her at bay. But he thought of her now, and remembered how he had felt the shimmer of her power flutter around the edges of his mind the day before. He'd pressed back at it, poked through it momentarily, and had seen her, clearly, kneeling in her tower room, her body washed by pale gold light, her hair a fiery fall to her shoulders. Her birthmark, the tiny pentagram high on her thigh, had shimmered. He had no doubt it had been that momentary jolt of desire that had allowed her to snap the link between them so quickly, so easily. No matter. It had been wrong of him to intrude on her the way he had. Rude and wrong, and he'd been sorry for it almost as soon as he'd done it. He would have to apologize for it, of course. There were rules of conduct that neither intimacy nor animosity could excuse breaking. No time like the present, he decided. He culled the most pressing paperwork and tucked it in his briefcase. He'd speak to Mia, then grab some takeout and finish his work at home over a meal. Unless he could convince her to have dinner with him as a peace offering, then work could wait. He walked out of the hotel just as Mia stepped out of the bookstore across the street. They stood where they were a moment, each obviously caught off guard. Then she swiveled on her heel and walked toward a spiffy little convertible. He had to dash across the street to catch her before she slipped into it.
Mia, a minute.
Go to hell.
You can send me there after, I apologize.
He snagged the car door she'd swung open and closed it again.
I was completely in the wrong. I have no excuse for that kind of discourtesy.
Being surprised didn't mean being mollified.
I don't recall you ever being so quick with an apology before.
She gave a little shrug.
Fine.
Accepted. Go away.
Give me 5 minutes.
No.
5 minutes, Mia. I've been cooped up all day, and I could use a walk and some fresh air.
She wouldn't struggle with him for the car door. It would be, and look to the people who were trying to pretend they weren't watching, undignified.
No one stopping you.
There's a great deal of air around here.
Give me a chance to explain. A casual walk on the beach, he said quietly. If you blow me off, you're just going to give them more to talk about, and me more to wonder about. A friendly conversation in public doesn't hurt either of us.
All right.
She dropped her car keys in the pocket of her long gray dress.
5 minutes.
She took a deliberate step away from him, slid her hands into her pockets, and jingled her keys as they walked along High Street toward the beach.
Was your first day productive?
It was a good start. Do you remember Stella Farley?
Of course. I see her quite often. She belongs to the book club at the store.
Hmm.
Another reminder that she'd been here while changes had taken place and he hadn't.
She has some ideas for getting back some of our lunch business that you've been stealing away.
Really?
Mia asked, amused.
Good luck.
She felt people watching them as they turned toward the seawall. She stopped there, sliding out of her shoes before stepping onto the sand.
I'll carry them.
No, thanks.
The sea was warm blue, deeper toward the horizon. Shells heaved up by the last high tide scattered the shore. Gulls circled, wheeled, cried.
I felt you, he began, yesterday. I felt you and reacted. That's not an excuse, it's a reason.
I've already said accepted.
Mia.
He reached out, but his fingers only brushed her sleeve as she moved away.
I don't want you to touch me. That's basic.
We were friends once.
She stopped to stare at him out of cold gray eyes.
Were we?
You know we were. We were more than lovers, more than...
Mates, he'd nearly said.
It wasn't just passion. We cared about each other. We shared thoughts.
Now my thoughts are my own, and I don't need any more friends.
Lovers? You never married.
She turned that staggering face on him, and her expression was all female and smug.
If I wanted a lover or a husband, I'd have one.
No question about it, he murmured. You're the most extraordinary creature. I thought of you.
Stop,
she warned.
Stop now.
Damn it, I'll say what I have to say. I thought of you.
He dropped his briefcase, grabbed her arms as some of the frustration broke through.
I thought of us. What's happened in between doesn't erase what we were to each other.
You erased it. Now you have to live with it as I did.
It's not just about us.
He tightened his grip. He could feel her vibrating and knew she could strike out, woman or witch, at any moment.
You know that as well as I do.
There is no us. Do you think, after all this time, after all I've done and all I've learned, I'd let fate toy with me again? I won't be used, not by you, not by a centuries-old curse.
A single bolt of white lightning speared out of the clear sky and blasted into the sand between his feet. He didn't jerk back, but it was a near thing. His throat was dry, but he nodded.
You always did have exquisite control.
Remember that. And remember this. I am done with you.
Not by a long shot. You need me to break the spell. Are you really willing to risk everything, everyone, for pride?
Pride?
Her color drained and her body went still.
You arrogant jackass. Do you think this is pride? You broke my heart.
The words, the way her voice trembled, had him dropping his hands.
More than broke it. You crushed it into dust. I loved you. I would have gone anywhere, done anything for you. I mourned for you until I thought I would die from it.
Mia.
Shaken, he reached up to touch her hair, only to have his hand slapped aside.
But I didn't die, Sam. I got over you and got on with my life. I like who I am now, and there's no going back for me. If you came here thinking differently, you're wasting your time. You won't have me again, and what you won't have, what you tossed aside, would have been the best thing in your life.
She walked away from him in long, unhurried strides, and left him alone to stare out at the sea, knowing she was right. 3.
You did what?
Zack stuck his head in the refrigerator and rummaged for a beer. He knew that tone. His wife didn't use it often, which was why it was so effective. He took a long time pulling out the beer and made sure his face was relaxed and composed when he looked back at her. She stood in front of the stove, where something wonderful was cooking. She had a wooden spoon in her fist and her fists on her hips. He thought she looked like an outraged and very sexy Betty Crocker. But he figured it wouldn't be healthy to say so just at the moment.
I invited Sam to dinner.
He smiled when he said it and twisted the top off the beer.
You know how I like to show off my beautiful wife's incredible cooking.
When she only slitted her eyes, he took a deep gulp from the bottle.
Problem? You never mind company for dinner.
I don't mind company,
but I do mind Sleet's balls.
Nell, Sam might have been a little reckless as a kid, but he was never sleazy, and he's one of my oldest friends.
And he broke the heart of one of my friends, and yours. He left her flat and went off to New York to do God knows what for more than 10 years. Then, she continued, working up a fine rage, he slithers back on island and expects everyone to greet him with open arms.
She slapped the spoon on the counter.
I, for one, am not interested in tuning up the brass band for Sam Logan.
How about just one trumpet player?
You think this is a joke?
She swiveled on her heel and strode to the back door. He managed to get there in time to brace a hand on the door.
No, sorry.
Nell, he ran his hand over her cap of hair.
Look, I'm sorry about what happened between Sam and Mia. I was sorry then, and I'm sorry now. The fact is, I grew up with Sam, and we were friends. Good friends.
Isn't were the operative word?
Not for me.
And for Zach, it was just that simple.
Mia matters to me, and so does he. I don't want to be put in the position of taking sides, not in my own home. More than that, more than anything, I don't want you and me at odds over it. But I shouldn't have asked him to dinner without talking to you first. I'll go head him off.
She bit back a sigh, but couldn't quite master the pout.
You're doing that to make me feel small and low.
He waited a beat.
Did it work?
Yes, damn it. She gave him a little shove. Get out of my way. If we're having company for dinner, there's no point in burning it.
But he didn't move aside. Instead, he took her hands and squeezed.
Thanks.
Don't thank me until I've gotten through the evening without giving him hives or warts.
Gotcha. How about I set the table?
How about you do?
You want candles?
Yeah, black ones.
She smirked as she walked over to check her wild rice.
To ward off negative energy.
Zach heaved out a breath.
Should be some evening.
Sam brought a good wine and sunny yellow daffodils, but she wasn't mollified. She was polite, brutally so, and served the wine on the comfortable front porch with canapes that she'd tossed together at the last minute. Sam wasn't sure if she meant that to be friendly or to illustrate that he would be admitted to her home in stages.
I hope you didn't go to any trouble, Sam told her. Nothing more tedious than unexpected guests.
No, there isn't, is there?
She replied sweetly.
But then again, I'm sure you're not used to potluck, so we'll all make do.
She swung back into the house, and Sam hissed out a breath. He was sure now. He was getting in, but in painful stages.
This is going well. Mia means a lot to her, for a lot of reasons.
Sam merely nodded, wandered to the rail of the front porch. Lucy, Zach's black lab, rolled over to expose her belly for a rub, batting her tail for a bit of charm. Crouching, Sam obliged her. He knew the reasons for Nell's fierce loyalty to Mia. He'd made it his business to know what happened on the island over the years. He knew Nell had been on the run when she'd arrived on Three Sisters, escaping an abusive husband. She had faked her own death, and he had to admire her guts for it, and had changed her name and her appearance as she zigzagged across the country, picking up jobs, waitressing, cooking. He'd seen the news reports on Evan Remington, who was now serving time in a prison mental facility, and he knew that Mia had given Nell a job running the bookstore cafe, had given her a home, and, he suspected, had taught her how to refine the gift. He'd recognized Nell as one of the three the minute he saw her.
She's had a rough time, your Nell. Very rough. She risked her life to save her life. When she got here, Mia gave her a chance to dig in, put down roots. I've got to be grateful to Mia for that, too. And more, he added, waiting until Sam turned back. You've heard about Remington. Hollywood power broker, wife-beater psychopath.
He straightened.
And I know he took a slice out of you trying to get to Nell. Yeah.
Absently, Zach rubbed a hand over his shoulder where Remington had stabbed him.
He tracked her here, knocked her around before I got to her. Then he took me out, temporarily.
She'd run into the woods, knowing he'd come after her and probably not take the time to finish me off.
His face went grim at the memory.
When I took off after them, Ripley and Mia were here. They knew Nell was in trouble.
Yes, Mia would know.
The son of a bitch had a knife to her throat.
Even now, the memory had rage swimming into him.
He'd have killed her. Maybe I could have gotten a shot off, maybe not, but he'd have killed her either way. She's the one who took him out. She gathered what was inside her, what she is, and with Mia and Ripley, turned what he was back on him. I watched it happen,
Zack murmured.
There in the little wood by the cottage where you're staying now. A circle of light out of nowhere. Then Remington was on the ground screaming.
She has courage and faith.
She does, Zack agreed. She's everything.
You're a lucky man.
Though his own mind took a smart sidestep at the thought of a woman, any woman, who could be everything to a man.
Her love for you is a tangible thing, even when she's pissed,
Sam said with a weak smile.
The way she's pissed now that you've invited Judas to her table. Why did you do it? Why did you leave?
Sam shook his head.
A lot of reasons. Some I'm still figuring out. When I have them, all of them, I'll tell Mia. You're expecting an awful lot of her.
Sam studied the wine in his glass.
Maybe I always did.
Zack worked hard to keep the conversation light and friendly at dinner. By his calculations, he talked more during that hour at the table than he normally did in a week. But every time he sent Nell an imploring look, she ignored it.
I can see why the cafe's taken a bite out of our lunch trade,
Sam said.
You're an artist in the kitchen, Mrs. Todd. My biggest regret is that you didn't walk into the hotel instead of Cafe Book when you came on island.
I went where I was meant to go.
Do you believe in that, in destiny?
Absolutely. She got to her feet to clear the table.
So do I. Absolutely.
He rose as well, picked up his plate. When Nell's back was turned, he gave Zack a little head signal. Make yourself scarce. Weighing his wife's ire against the sheer exhaustion of playing buffer, Zack pushed away from the table.
I need to round up Lucy, he said,
and using his dog as an excuse, he hurried out.
Nell sent a fulminating look at his retreating back.
Why don't you go on with Zack? I'll make a pot of fresh coffee in a minute. Absently, Sam reached down to pet the gray cat that had uncurled from under the table to stretch. It hissed at him.
I'll just give you a hand, he said, after barely saving his hand from a nasty swipe.
He saw Nell give the cat he'd heard her call Diego a small, approving nod. I don't want a hand.
You don't want my hand,
Sam corrected.
Zack's the best friend I ever had.
Rather than spare him a look, Nell opened the dishwasher and began loading. You have an odd way of defining friendship.
However I define it, it's a fact. He matters to both of us, so for his sake I hope we can call a truce.
I'm not at war with you. He glanced at the cat again. It had plopped down beside its mistress to wash and watch Sam narrowly.
You'd like to be.
Fine. She slammed the dishwasher door, turned. I'd like to hang you by your toes for what you did to Mia, and while you're hanging by your toes, I'd like to start a nice, steady fire under you so you'd roast slowly and in great pain. And while you were roasting slowly and in great pain, I'd like to—
I get the picture.
If you do, you know just how useless it is for you to try to charm me.
Did you make all the right choices, the best choices, the wisest choices when you were 20?
She slapped on the hot water, squirted soap under the stream. I never deliberately hurt someone.
And if you had, deliberately or otherwise, how long would you expect to be punished for it? Damn it!
He swore as she ignored him, then switched the water off himself. She cursed right back, lifted a hand to turn it on again. Infuriated, he closed his hand over hers. Light, shimmering blue, sparked between their meshed fingers. Nell went very still as her anger slid under shock.
She left her hand in his as she shifted her body, angling it until they were face to face and she could look directly into his eyes.
"Why didn't anyone tell me?"
she demanded.
"I don't know."
He smiled as the light mellowed to a glow.
"Sister."
Baffled now, she shook her head.
"There are only three who form the circle."
"Three who came from three, but four elements. Yours is air, and she who was lacked your courage. Mine is water. You believe in destiny, in the craft. We're connected, and you can't change that."
"No."
But she would have to think about it, hard and long. Slowly, she slid her hand from under his.
"I don't have to like it, or you."
"You believe in fate, in the craft, but not in forgiveness."
"I believe in forgiveness, when it's earned."
He stepped away, jammed his hands in his pockets.
"I came here tonight planning on charming you, to scrape away a few layers of your resentment and dislike. Part of that was pride. It's tough having your oldest friend's wife detest you."
He picked up the wine bottle, poured some into the glass she'd yet to clear.
"Part of that was strategy."
He drank.
"I know very well that you and Ripley stand in front of Mia."
"I won't see her hurt again."
"And you're sure that's what I'll do?"
He brought his glass to the counter.
"Then I came into your home and felt what you and Zack have together, what you've made between you. I sat at your table and you fed me, though you'd rather have hung me by my toes. So instead of charming, I'm charmed."
He glanced around the kitchen. It had always been a warm and friendly room. Once he'd been welcome there.
"I admire you for what you made out of your life, and I envy you your clear vision and your happy home. Zack's important to me."
He looked back at her as she said nothing.
"It's hard, I imagine, for you to buy that, but it's fact. I don't intend to do anything that complicates his relationship with you. I'll go out the back while he's busy with his Lucy."
Nell dried her hands.
"I haven't made coffee yet."
He turned at the door, just looked at her, and she saw why Mia had fallen for him. Not just the dangerous good looks, but in his eyes she saw so much power, so much pain.
"I'm not forgiving you," she said briskly, "but if Zack considers you a friend, you must have some redeeming qualities, somewhere. Sit down, we're having trifle for dessert."
She had humbled him, Sam thought later, as he walked back to the cottage. The pretty blue-eyed blonde who'd been bitingly polite, then brutally frank, then cautiously understanding, all in one evening, had brought him to his knees. It was rare for him to want to earn someone's respect, but he now wanted badly to earn Nell Todd's. He walked to the beach as he had walked it as a boy, restlessly, and turned for home as he had as a boy, without any sense of pleasure. How could he explain that while he had loved the house on the bluff, it had never been his place? He'd had no regrets when his father had sold it. The cove, the cave, they had meant a great deal once, but the house itself had just been wood and glass, with so little warmth inside. Demands, yes, to be a Logan, to succeed, to excel. Well, he'd learned to do all three, but he wondered now what it had cost him. He thought again of the spirit in the Todd house. He'd always believed houses had spirits, and theirs was warm, affectionate. Marriage actually worked for some people, he decided. The commitment, the unity, and the promise. Not just for convenience or status, but for heart. That, in his mind, was a rare, rare gift. There'd been little affection in his house. Oh, no neglect, no abuse, no meanness. His parents had been partners, but never in his memory a couple. And their marriage was as coldly efficient as any merger. He could still remember being baffled, fascinated, and vaguely embarrassed when he was a boy by the open displays of affection between Zack's parents. He thought of them now, traveling around in their house on wheels and reportedly having the time of their lives. His parents would be appalled at the idea. How much, he wondered, did who we came from form us? Did Zack's staggeringly functional childhood predispose him to create his own functional family? The luck of the draw? Or was it all, in the end, what we made of ourselves, each choice leading to another choice. He paused now, looking out and watching the swath of white light sweep over the water. Mia's lighthouse on Mia's cliffs. How many times had he stood and studied that hopeful beam and thought of her? Wanted her. He couldn't remember when it had started. There were times when he thought he'd been born wanting her, and it had been terrifying, that feeling that he'd been swamped by some tide that had begun forming before his existence. How many nights had he ached for her? Even when he'd had her, even when he'd been inside her, he'd ached. Love, for him, had been a storm full of boundless pleasure and abject terror. For her it had simply been. Standing on the edge of the beach, he sent his thoughts winging over the black water toward the beam of light, toward the cliffs, the stone house, toward her, and the wall she'd built around what was hers, rejected them, bounced them back at him.
"You have to let me in," he murmured, "sooner or later."
But he left it alone for now and continued to walk toward the cottage. The solitude he'd welcomed on his first day pressed down on him now and became loneliness. He shook it off, and instead of going into the house, he moved into the woods. Until Mia talked to him, he would learn what he needed to learn, see what he needed to see, by other means. The dark was deep, with a scatter of stars and a thin sickle of moon, but there were other ways to see. He tuned himself to the night. He could hear the babble of a little stream and knew that wildflowers were sleeping on its banks. There was the rustle of a small animal in the brush and the plaintive call of an owl. One would feed, the other would perish. He smelled earth and water and knew there would be rain before morning. And he felt power. He moved through the dark, through the trees, as confidently as a man walks down Main Street on a sunny afternoon. Power pulsed along his skin, that awakening thrill of magic. He saw, where there was only ground scattered with fallen leaves, where the circle had been cast. The three were strong when linked, he thought. He'd felt that same trickle of energy on the beach and had known that a circle of power had been cast there, but this one had come first, and so he would look here first.
"It would be simpler if they'd just tell me," he said aloud. "But probably not as satisfying. So?"
He lifted his hands with palms up, like cups ready to be filled.
"Show me. I call to the three, once and ever a part of me. I use as my mirror the night to bring what transpired to my sight. Show me how and why this circle was cast, that I might begin to complete my task. Grant this vision unto me. As I will, so mote it be."
The night thinned and billowed like a blowing curtain, parted. Fear like a rabbit in a trap, hate sharp as ravaging teeth, and love wrapped warm in courage. He saw what Zack had told him, saw Nell racing through the woods, and her thoughts were clear to him, fear and grief for Zack, a desperation not only to escape what pursued her but to save the man she loved. Sam's hands fisted as he saw Remington leap at her, angle the knife at her throat. Emotions pounded at him. There was Mia, in a black dress scattered with silver stars, and Ripley holding a gun. Zack, bleeding, his own weapon pointed. The night was alive with madness and terror. The magic began to hum. It pulsed from Nell, who glowed as she rejected her fears. It shimmered around Mia, whose eyes gleamed as silver as the stars she wore, and slowly, almost reluctantly, it sparked from Ripley when she lowered her gun and clasped Mia's hand. And then the circle burned like blue fire. The punch of it caught Sam unprepared and pushed him a full 2 paces back before he regained himself. But he'd lost his hold on the vision, and it wavered. Faded.
"The circle's unbroken."
He lifted his face, watched clouds stream across the stars.
"You have to let me in, Mia, or this was for nothing."
Late into the night, without plan, without design, he reached out to her in dreams, floating back in time to when love was fresh and sweet and everything. She was 17 and leggy, with hair a tumble of fire and eyes as warm as summer fog. Her beauty struck him, as always, a fist in the heart. She laughed as she waited in the cove. She wore trim khaki shorts and a bright blue top that left her arms and an inch of her midriff bare. He could smell her over the scents of salt and sea. He could smell that heady, taunting fragrance that was Mia.
"Don't you want to swim?"
She laughed again as she splashed up water.
"Sad-eyed Sam, what are you brooding about today?"
"I'm not brooding." He had been. His parents were freezing him out because he'd chosen to work on island that summer in the hotel rather than in New York. He'd been wondering if he was making a mistake, a terrible mistake, by being so desperate to stay on island because of Mia. Because the idea of being away from her month after month was both tantalizing and unthinkable. Yet he had begun to think it, to wonder about it more and more every time he left the three sisters to go back to the mainland and college. He'd begun to consider testing himself by making some excuse not to come back to the island, back to her, some weekend during the semester. Every time he left the mainland on the ferry, they pulled him back, the island and Mia. Now he was refusing to take the escape hatch that had been tailor-made for him. He needed to think it over again. Reconsider. But when Mia had come along to his beach, he'd been too crowded with lust and longing to brood or to think about being anywhere but with her.
"If you're not brooding, prove it."
She walked backward in the water so that it lapped at her calves, her knees, those long white thighs.
"Come in and play."
"Too old for games."
"I'm not."
She slid into the water, skimmed through it like a mermaid, and when she surfaced, water raining from her hair, her shirt clinging seductively to her breasts, he thought he'd go mad.
"But I forgot. You're nearly 19. Too dignified to splash around in the water."
She did a surface dive and streaked through the dark blue water of the cove. When he grabbed her ankle, she kicked and came up laughing. Her laughter, as always, bewitched him.
"I'll give you dignity,"
he said, and dunked her. It was innocent, sun and water, the bright beginning of summer, the slippery edge between childhood and the future. It couldn't stay innocent. They splashed, warred, swam as sleekly as dolphins, then came together as they always did, lips meeting first under the surface, then clinging when they burst through into the air. Need rose with them, strong and urgent, so that she trembled as she wrapped herself around him. Her lips, warm and wet, parted for his with a trust and acceptance that shook him to the bone.
"Mia."
Knowing that he would die wanting her, he pressed his face into the wet ropes of her hair.
"We have to stop. Let's go for a walk."
Even as he spoke, his hands were moving over her. He couldn't help himself.
"I dreamed last night,"
she said softly. Cradled in his arms, she sighed.
"Of you. It's always of you. And when I woke, I knew it would be today."
She dipped her head back, and he all but fell into those great gray eyes.
"I want to be with you and no one else. I want to give myself to you and no one else."
His blood pounded for her. He tried to think of right and wrong, of tomorrow, but could only think of now.
"You have to be sure."
"Sam,"
she traced kisses over his face,
"I've always been sure."
She slid away from him, but only to take his hand. It was she who led him out of the water and to the cave tucked into the bluff. The cave was cool and dry, high enough at its heart for him to stand upright. He saw the blanket spread near the far wall and the candles scattered over the floor, and looked at her.
"I told you I knew. This is our place."
Watching him, she reached for the tiny buttons running down the front of her shirt, and he saw her fingers tremble.
"You're cold."
"A little."
He stepped to her.
"And afraid."
Her lips curved.
"A little. But I won't be either for long."
"I'll be careful with you."
She let her hands fall to her sides so that he could finish unbuttoning her shirt.
"I know. I love you, Sam."
He lowered his lips to hers as he peeled the cotton away.
"I love you."
The little niggle of fear inside her vanished.
"I know."
He'd touched her before and been touched. Glorious, frustrating caresses too often hurried. Now, as they undressed each other, the candles flickered into life, As they lowered to the blanket, a thin film seemed to coat the mouth of the cave, closing them in. Their mouths met, sweet and hot. Even as her pleasure began to rise, she sensed him holding back. His fingers, sometimes unsteady, skimmed over her as if he feared she would vanish.
"I won't leave you,"
she murmured, then gasped when his mouth, suddenly urgent, found her breast. She arched beneath him, hands stroking, body as fluid as the water that scented it. When he looked at her hair damp and tumbled on the blanket, her eyes clouded with what he brought her, he shuddered with power, and made her fly. She cried out, a long, full-throated sound that rippled through him and made him feel invincible. When she opened for him, offering him her innocence, he trembled. Through the rage of blood, the pound of need, he struggled to be gentle. Still, he saw the flicker of shock.
"Only for a minute."
Delirious, he ran kisses over her face.
"I promise, only for a minute."
Then he surrendered to the demands of his body and took her. Her hands fisted on the blanket, and she bit back the first cry, but almost as soon as the pain began, warmth replaced it.
"Oh."
Her breath shuddered out again on a sigh.
"Of course."
She turned her lips to the side of his neck.
"Of course."
And began to move under him. She rose and took him deeper, fell and drew him with her. When warmth simmered to heat, their bodies grew slick. Clinging, they took each other. When she lay wrapped in his arms, half dreaming, the candlelight burned gold.
"This is where she found him."
Sam traced his fingers over her shoulders. He couldn't stop touching her. The lazy, sexual haze clouded his mind, so he forgot all he'd thought of on the beach.
"Hmm?"
"The one who was fire. The one who's mine. This is where she found her Silky, in human form, and fell in love while he slept."
"How do you know?"
She started to say she'd always known, but shook her head instead.
"She took his pelt and hid it away so she could keep him. For love. It couldn't be wrong when it was for love."
Basking in the afterglow, Sam nuzzled her neck. He wanted to be here with her. He wanted nothing, no one else. Never would. Never could. Now the realization steadied rather than unnerved him.
"Nothing's wrong when it's for love."
"But she couldn't keep him,"
Mia said quietly.
"Years later, after they'd had children, after she'd lost her sisters, her circle, he found his pelt. He couldn't stop what he did. It was his nature. Once he'd found his pelt, nothing, not even love, could make him stay. He left her, went into the sea and forgot she existed, forgot his home and his children."
"It makes you sad to think of it."
He held her tighter.
"Don't be sad now."
"Don't leave me."
She buried her face against his shoulder.
"Don't ever leave me. I think I'd die as she died, alone and heartbroken."
"I won't."
But something went cold inside him.
"I'm right here. Look."
He shifted so that they faced the cave wall. Lifting a finger, he laid it on the stone. Light sparked from his fingertip and etched words into rock. She read the Gaelic, and her eyes misted.
"My heart is your heart, ever and always."
She lifted her own finger, carved a Celtic notch beneath the words, a promise of unity. She turned those swimming eyes up to his.
"And mine's yours."
Alone in her house on the cliff, Mia turned her face into her pillow and murmured his name in her sleep. 4. The rain, a steady drumming splatter, began before morning. It rode on a kicky little wind that had tender green leaves shivering and foamed the surf. Throughout the day it continued to blow and spit until the air was raw with damp, the sea as unremittingly gray as the sky. It showed no signs of abating by evening. It was good for the flowers, Mia told herself as she stood at the window and stared at the unbroken dullness of the gloom. The earth needed a good soaking, and despite the chill, there would be no frost to damage delicate buds. The first fine day, she would take off work and spend hours gardening, an entire precious day with no company and no demands but her flowers. That was the beauty and privilege of owning her own business. The occasional privilege helped balance out the weight of responsibility, of business and of magic. She'd had a dozen things to do in the store that day. It didn't matter that she'd slept poorly, tossed in her dreams, or that her mood was so low she'd wanted nothing so much as to bury herself under the blankets. The fact that she'd considered it, even briefly, had been sufficiently appalling to get her up and out. Then she'd forgotten, and she never forgot anything, that Nell and Ripley were coming to the house. At least they were a distraction, something to keep her mind off her memories and dreams, unwelcome intruders into the disciplined order of her life. He'd snuck into her dreams, the bastard.
"Would you rather do this another time, Mia?"
"What?"
Frowning, she looked up, blinked. By the goddess, she wasn't even paying attention to her distraction.
"No, no, sorry. The rain's making me edgy."
"Right." Ripley slouched in her chair, hooked a leg over its arm. There was a bowl of popcorn in her lap, and she popped pieces in her mouth quickly, carelessly. "Like it's a weather pattern that got under your skin." Saying nothing, Mia walked to the sofa, curled up. Tucking her bare feet under the spread of her skirt, she flicked a finger at the stone fireplace across the room. The logs burst into snapping, sizzling flame.
"There, that's better."
She plumped one of her velvet pillows as if she had no concern other than her own comfort.
"Now, Nell, what did you want to talk to me about before we discuss our plans for the solstice?"
"Get her," Ripley gestured with her wine glass and dumped a neat fall of popcorn in her mouth with her free hand. "Sounds like the chairwoman for some ladies' social club."
"Not so far off. Club, coven. But any time you want to take charge, Deputy Fife."
"Okay," Nell held up a hand for peace. It seemed she was always calling for peace when Mia and Ripley spent more than 10 minutes together. There were times when she thought it would be simpler to just knock their heads together.
"Why don't we move beyond the insult portion of our program? I wanted to say that I thought the first meeting of the cooking club went well."
Mia steadied her temper, nodded. She leaned over, contemplated the glossy purple grapes she'd arranged on a pale green dish, selected one.
"It did. It was a terrific idea, Nell. I think we'll find it brings business into the store and the cafe. We sold a dozen cookbooks that night, and a dozen more since. I was thinking, after we give it a couple of months to see if interest holds, we might want to plan a combination event with the book club. Maybe around Christmas? I know that's a long way off, but it never hurts to plan."
Mia finished, and, nipping into a second grape, leveled a smirk in Ripley's direction.
"There are a number of novels that have food playing a major role, and some even have recipes. We might suggest one for the book club. Then the cooking club could prepare the dishes. Everybody has fun."
"And you sell books," Ripley pointed out.
"Which, oddly enough, is the primary function of Cafe Book. Now, there's something else."
Mia paused, lifted an eyebrow at Nell.
"All right."
Nervous, Nell pressed her lips together.
"I know selling books is the primary function, but... well, I had this idea a while ago. I've been playing with it in my head, trying to see if it would work or be worthwhile. You may think it's out of line, but..."
"Oh, for heaven's sake, Nell!"
Out of patience, Ripley shifted in her chair and set the bowl of popcorn aside.
"She thinks you should expand the cafe."
"Ripley, would you just let me tell it my way?"
"I would, but I don't have a week to spare before I get home."
"Expand the cafe?"
Mia interrupted.
"It already takes up nearly half the square feet on the second level." "Yes, the way things are now."
After shooting Ripley a hot look, Nell turned back to Mia.
"But if you took out the windows on the east side, added a terrace of... oh, say 6 feet by 10 feet, used atrium or sliding doors leading out to it, you'd have more room for seating and the benefit of alfresco seating in good weather."
Because Mia said nothing, just lifted her glass from the table, Nell rushed on.
"I could extend the menu here and there, adding more entree selections for a nice casual dinner during the summer evening hours. Of course, you'd have to take on more help, and I should mind my own business.
I didn't say that, Mia leaned back. But it is a complicated idea. There's zoning and building codes. Then there's cost and the ratio of profit projection against that cost. The potential loss of business during that kind of remodel.
I've, looked into it a little.
With a quick, sheepish smile, Nell pulled a stack of papers out of her satchel. Mia stared, then sat back with a long laugh.
You've been busy, little sister. All right. Let me look it all over, think about it.
It's intriguing, she murmured. More seating, entree selections. I imagine, if successful, it would nip into the hotel's dinner business, at least during the season.
At Mia's small, satisfied smile, Nell felt a wave of guilt.
There's one more thing. We had Sam Logan over for dinner, she blurted out.
Mia's smile slipped away.
Excuse me?
You had that rat bastard at your table?
Ripley popped out of her chair.
You fed him a meal? Did you at least poison him while you were at it?
No, I didn't poison him. Damn it, I didn't invite him. Zach did. They're friends.
Nell sent Mia a look filled with misery and guilt.
I can't tell Zach who he can or can't invite to the house.
Just let Book try asking some traitorous son of a bitch to leech off us.
Ripley bared her teeth as if she was ready to take a bite out of her new husband, whether he had the thought or not.
Zach always was stupid.
Now, just a minute.
He's been my brother longer than he's been your husband, Ripley shot back. I can call him stupid, especially when he is.
There's no point in this,
Mia said quietly, and drew both Nell's and Ripley's attention.
No point in casting blame or in recriminations. Zach's entitled to choose his friends and to have them in his home. That's nothing Nell should feel guilty over. What's between Sam and me is between Sam and me, and it doesn't affect anyone else.
Doesn't it?
Nell shook her head.
Why didn't anyone tell me he was one of us?
Because he's not.
It all but exploded out of Ripley. Sam Logan isn't one of us.
I don't think Nell was implying he's a girl, Mia said dryly, or even an islander, though, of course, since he was raised here, he'll always be considered an islander.
She waved her hand as if brushing that aside.
The fact that he has the gift has nothing to do with us.
You're sure of that?
Nell demanded.
We are the three.
In the stone hearth, flames rose and snapped.
We make the circle. It's for us to do what must be done. Just because some—what was that lovely term of Ripley's? Oh, yes, just because some rat bastard has magic doesn't change anything.
Deliberately calm, she stretched out her hand for another grape.
Now, about the solstice.
She wouldn't let it change anything. She would do what had to be done, alone or with her sisters, but she wouldn't allow anyone into their circle or into her heart. In the deepest part of night, while the island slept, she stood on her cliffs. The cold rain poured, and the black sea lashed at the jagged rocks as if it would in one night wear them to nubs. All around her, the irritable wind swirled, snapping at her cloak until it billowed up like wings. There was no light, no relief from the black except the single circling blade from the white tower behind her. It cut over her, the cliffs, the sea, then left her alone in the dark again.
Fly,
the canny voice whispered.
Fly out and let go, and it will all be over. Why do you fight the inevitable? Why would you live with the loneliness?
How many times, she wondered, had she heard that voice? How many times had she come here testing herself against it? Even when her heart had been shattered, she'd come and had won. She would never give in.
You won't beat me.
She felt the cold as the dirty fog slithered over ground and rock, felt it like icy fingers wrapping around her ankles where it could tug and tempt.
I'll never give up.
She raised her arms, spread them wide, and the wild, whirling wind she called tore the fog to tatters.
What's mine I serve and protect and keep.
She lifted her face to the rain, let it wash over her like tears.
Whether I wake or whether I sleep, to what I am I will be true in what I say, in what I do.
Magic poured into her and pulsed like a heart.
This vow I make and will not break. I will meet my destiny. As I will, so mote it be.
With her eyes closed, she fisted her hands as if she could beat against the night, as if she could use them to rip through the veil that blinded her from what would come for her.
Why don't I know? Why can't I feel? Why can't I do anything but feel?
Something shivered on the air, like warm hands brushing her cheeks. It wasn't comfort she wanted, or the urges to be patient. So she turned from them, from the cliffs and the sea. Her cloak whipped behind her as she ran toward the lights of home.
While Mia wrapped herself in isolation, cocooned in the house on the cliff, Lulu was propped in bed with her third glass of wine, her latest true crime book, Diary of an American Cannibal, and a bag of cheese and garlic potato chips. Across the room, the bedroom TV blasted out gunfire as Mel Gibson and Danny Glover kicked ass in Lethal Weapon. It was, for Lulu, her Saturday night ritual. Her night clothes consisted of ratty shorts, a T-shirt that announced it was better to be rich than stupid, and a book light fastened to a ball cap. She munched, sipped, divided her attention between the book and the video, and considered herself in her own personal heaven. Rain drummed outside the windows of her colorful little salt box, and the breeze rattled the love beads that dangled in lieu of curtains. Content, marginally tipsy, she sprawled under the spread she'd quilted from squares of madras, paisley, and tie-dye scraps. You could take the child out of the 60s, but you couldn't take the 60s out of this child, she often thought. The words on the page began to blur, so she adjusted her glasses, boosted herself up in bed a little more. She just wanted to finish one more chapter and find out if the young prostitute was going to be stupid enough to get her throat slit and her internal organs gutted. Lulu was banking on it. But her head dipped. She jerked it back up, blinked. She could have sworn she heard someone whisper her name. Hearing things, she thought in disgust. Getting old was God's big rip-off. She polished off the glass of wine, glanced toward the TV, and there was Mel, his pretty face filling the screen, his eyes brilliantly blue as they grinned at her.
Hey, Lou, how's it going?
She rubbed her eyes, blinked rapidly, but the image was still there. What the hell?
That's what I say. What the hell?
The image drew back, far enough for her to see the gun. Its barrel looked to be the size of a cannon.
Nobody wants to live forever, right?
The explosion boomed out of the set, flashed hot red light into the room. The sharp pain in Lulu's chest had her crying out, frantically pressing her hands between her breasts. Chips flew as she scrambled up, looking for blood. She found nothing but her own wildly beating heart. On the screen, Mel and Danny were arguing about police procedure. Shaken and feeling like an old fool, Lulu staggered to the window. A little fresh air, she thought. Clear her head. Must have fallen asleep for a minute, she decided as she pushed the rattling beads aside and shoved her window all the way up. She shivered. It was cold as winter. Colder, she realized, than it should have been. And the mists swirling out of the ground had an odd tone to them, like floating bruises, all dull purples and sickly yellows. She could see her calliope of flowers and the moon ball rising up through them, her rude little gargoyle who stuck his tongue out of a grinning mouth at passers-by. The rain sounded icy now, and when she reached out the window, cold, sharp shards of it stabbed into her palm. Her glasses slid down as she jerked her hand back, and when she shoved them back into place, she'd have sworn the gargoyle was closer to the house, turned so that instead of his profile she could see three-quarters of the homely face. Her chest began to hurt from the racing of her heart. Need new glasses, she thought. Eyes are going. As she stared, frozen in shock, the gargoyle swiveled to face her and bared long, vicious teeth. Jesus H. Christ! She could hear them, actually hear the greedy snap of them as he inched through the fog toward the house, toward the open window. Behind him, the little flute playing frog she'd bought the week before began to hop closer, and the flute he held was now a long, jagged-edged knife.
Nobody will care.
Reeling, she snapped her head around. On TV, a huge cartoon snake with Mel Gibson's handsome face leered at her.
Nobody will give two shits if you're dead. You've got nobody, do you, Lou? No man, no kid, no family. Nobody to give a rat's ass about you.
That's bull!
Terror screamed through her as she saw that the gargoyle and his companion had come within a foot of the house while she was looking away. Teeth snapped, a hungry sound, and the knife swished through the thick fog like a deadly metronome.
That's just horseshit.
Her shaking hands fumbled at the window, her breath panting out in puffs as she fought to find a grip on the sash. As she slammed down, she fell backward and hit the floor with a jar of her bones. She lay there, struggling to catch her breath, struggling to find her nerve. When she managed to get to her knees, she crawled, whimpering, toward her sewing basket and grabbed two knitting needles as weapons. But when she managed to find the courage to go back to the window, the rain was falling, warm and gentle, the mists had cleared, and the gargoyle, homely and harmless, squatted in its usual spot, ready to insult the next visitor. Lulu stood in the bedroom while yet another firefight broke out on television. She rubbed her hand over her clammy face.
That must have been some bottle of Chardonnay, she said aloud.
But for the first time since she'd moved into the little house, she, armed with her needles, walked through it, locking all the doors and windows. A man, however dedicated, was entitled to some time off. That's what Sam told himself as he drove away from the village. He'd spent hours at his desk, in meetings, doing inspections, reading reports. If he didn't clear his mind, it was going to fry. And it was Sunday. The rain had finally blown out to sea, leaving the island sparkling like a jewel. Getting out, seeing what on this little clump of land had changed and what hadn't, was as important to his business as ledgers and projections. That sensibility, he knew, had skipped a generation in the Logan family. He'd always been aware that his parents had viewed the 20-odd years they'd spent on three sisters as a kind of exile, which he imagined was why they'd found excuses to leave it so often during that period, and then to pull up stakes permanently when his grandfather had died. It had never been home for them. Coming back had proved that to him, just as it had proved the island was home for him. One answer he'd come back to find was clear to him now. Three sisters was his. Pleasure boats were skimming along the water, motors humming or sails fat with wind. It brought him a steadying kind of pleasure to see them. Buoys bobbed, orange, red, white, against the cool blue surface. The land jutted or curved or tumbled out to meet the water. He saw a family clamming and a young boy.